Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Empowering Family Caregiver Show on Blog Talk Radio. I'm Susan Baida, your host and co-founder of eCareDiary.com. This is my first show on Blog Talk Radio since last August, I believe. I was out on maternity leave for a little while, and I'm so happy to be back. And I hope all of you who've celebrated the holidays this past weekend had a wonderful, nice long weekend. And to those of you who don't celebrate Christmas, I hope you enjoyed the holidays. And we all look forward, actually, to the new year coming up very soon. Let me just jump to the focus of our show. I think this is a very important topic. It's a very exciting topic because it's about a progressive movement called the Village Movement, an innovative concept for senior living. And to help shed light on this very topic, I'm very pleased to introduce Andrea Cohen, co-founder and CEO of Houseworks. It's the largest single-site private home care company in the country, based in Newton, Massachusetts, and Bethesda, Maryland. A social entrepreneur, Andrea is also the leader of the Village Movement, and it's a very, as I mentioned before, very innovative concept for senior living. Andrea was selected as an at-large delegate to the 2005 White House Conference on Aging, where she helped influence national policies that will impact all seniors and family caregivers in the years ahead. Andrea, it's such a pleasure to have you here today. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you. I'm so happy to be here during this holiday week.
I know. I think this is actually a great time, believe it or not, because I think a lot of families are together with their, you know, elder loved ones, perhaps in situations of long-distance care. So we actually think this is a great week to have a show, and I'd love to chat with you now about the Village Movement, and I want to kind of jump into it really quickly. Can you tell us about the Village Movement? What does that mean?
Well, it's basically what happened. It was a little over 10 years ago when folks from Beacon Hill in Boston approached me and wanted to think about how they could stay in their own communities. They didn't want to move out of their communities into senior housing or to go to nursing homes. How can they harness the energy of where they've been and stay there? So that was really the beginning of it, and it started with Beacon Hill Village. I'd say there's probably now about 100 villages running nationally with thousands and more just sort of thinking about it in all these communities. But the idea really is to be able to sort of stay where you are and stay engaged in your communities, but not have to worry, what if? What if I need this or what if I need that? How can they stay where they are and age, remain engaged, and not worry? And that's really sort of what the concept came out of.
That's terrific. And now tell us a little bit about Beacon Hill. Is that a community of seniors? Tell us a little bit about the background of Beacon Hill.
Well, Beacon Hill is actually a neighborhood in Boston, and now the village has grown from Beacon Hill to the Back Bay. And, and these were just folks that had, some of them had lived there for generations, and they had the wherewithal, right, in Boston to be able to say, I just want to be there. And they were real pioneers. They were the first community to actually take it on. So they formed their own private not-for-profit, hired a director who's been there since the start, and they collect dues, and for their dues, the members in the community can join and get certain services. And the services are both about services such as, we provide the home care to them, for example. Other people provide fitness classes or other kinds of home repair services. But it's both about sort of vetting good service providers, but also building community. So a lot of people who live in neighborhoods now, don't know their own community. They don't know their neighbors. So this is a way to both get the services you need, but remain engaged in a community that you might not be as engaged in as you were when you were younger.
That's fantastic. And these are people who have lived in their homes for many years. Would you say, like, how many years on average would you say that the seniors who are part of this village movement, how long have they been in their homes?
You know, I think that varies. I think it would be hard to actually say that. It seems to me that the sort of neighborhoods that it's springing up in, these are people who have lived in these neighborhoods all their lives and just
That's
don't want to
amazing.
Move out. So, you know, it's hard to know as the villages.
Sure.
You know, we're sort of now in our second iteration of the movement where different kinds of villages are springing up for different reasons.
Right. So, well, I would imagine that for the adult children of the seniors living as part of the village movement, that this must be, very a welcome service, correct? I mean, are they very involved now as well with the village movement while their parents are utilizing the services of the village movement?
Oh, that's a great question. I mean, you know, what's happening is that the folks who are have initially started forming the movement are many of the seniors themselves, which is why this is such a great movement. You know, it's
right.
So driven by the seniors themselves, and some of it, even the adult children, saying, you know what, I, you know, saw how difficult it was for my parents, and I really want to change this for me. So some of it are, you know, people who are thinking that they might need that, but a lot of it are just seniors who are, you know, independent and watched even their own parents having to move. So I think that the families, though, now when they're hearing about this, are loving the fact that their parents are part of a bigger community. If they're living, you know, if they're living in their own homes in a community, the fact that there's another community surrounding their parents is just, I think it gives them lots of peace of mind because, you know, I think what we're all realizing is that in order for us to really age in a good way, we have to remain engaged, and that's what these villages are doing. So whether it be for the seniors themselves or for the family members who are starting them or being part of it with their parents, I mean,
right.
It's just a great way to start that kind of interaction, I think.
I couldn't agree more, and I think aside from the fact that, you know, the village movement offers services that the community of seniors can participate in, I mean, it also, I think, prevents the isolation from happening as well because, of course, as we age and we have ailments that may prevent us from physically moving the way we used to, you know, isolation can become a very big issue. So this keeps them engaged.
Right, exactly. I mean, when I think about, you know, I'm actually going to be 54 in 2 days, right? So, you know,
happy birthday.
Thank you. But you know, I think about, you know, everything that we think about for the village movement or even think about for my business Houseworks, and you know, a lot of the folks we deal with there are the adult children who are trying to provide care for their parent. You know, I think a lot about what would I want, and I think the generation, or my generation now, is really, you know, we're pushing the envelope a little bit. We're saying we're gonna make a change here. We're gonna do it differently. Healthcare is different. You know, how we define healthcare is different, and
right.
You know, and we know that people want to stay at home for the most part. So what are the kinds of things that we can do as a generation? You know, this in a sense will probably be our legacy, right?
Right.
So,
well, I want to delve into more specifics about the village movement, but I guess before we get to the step of needing a movement like the village movement,
right.
You know, the whole idea about talking to your parent about what's next.
Yeah,
it could be very, very stressful. And, of course, this is the week that I'm sure a lot of families have traveled to be with one another, and this is probably the week that many, you know, many families or many adult children are having that very conversation.
Yep.
And I like to ask this question amongst professionals like yourself who have been involved in this, in, you know, the care of seniors. How would you recommend that adult children can approach this conversation about what's next?
Yeah, I think that's another really important question that, you know, is hard to answer with, you know, a response that's going to absolutely do it, because everybody has to sort of do it within their comfort zone, right?
Right.
Everybody has to respond in a way that, you know, will be comfortable for a family member. But one of the things that I talk about when I think about this and when I talk to families is sometimes it's really good to get inside the head of your parent and think about what they're worried about. Because as the family caregiver, you know, we're all, you know, we know we're making this high-stake decision. We know we don't, a lot of us, you know, aren't familiar with the options. It's like this whole new world. We're busy. Our parents are going from one transition to the next. We don't know where they should be and when, unless you know who to call. So
right.
We have all of this going on, and we're like out of our comfort zone. It's just, you know, even when I was doing it for my own parents and I knew everything, I like didn't know what to do, because you become, it's very emotional, and it's just, you don't, and
yeah.
You're not in your own world.
Right.
So sometimes with the parents, you know, what I try to do is sort of coach people to say, think about what your parents are thinking about now, because sometimes when you know what's going on in their heads, you can approach it differently. So,
yeah.
You know, they're thinking, gee, my life is changing. I'm losing control. You know, I'm not going to move, even though you think it's the right thing for me to do. I'm losing my privacy. I can't relax with someone in my home. And, you know, they don't want to be a burden. So, you know,
right.
Everybody who comes to me and says, you know, my parents say they don't need any help. Well, no parent ever really says they need help. Because
right.
It's really hard. They're scared, you know. It's scared to rely on somebody. So I think it's good for us as caregivers to just think about that and know that. So when a parent might get, like, defensive, you know, think about it's because they're just scared and try to push through that. But that's why I think those conversations are so important. Like, if you can have a direct conversation and say, you know, what is it that's scaring you? Or if you can be, you know, listen and don't argue or contradict point by point, you know, even if you are right, which you might be as the family caregiver, but, you know,
right.
Just listen. And maybe it's not you that says it, the caregiver. The caregiver, you know, have someone else, like, that they trust that's not you. But I think the thing that's the most important, or as important as anything that I've said, is that, you know, it's like you have to include your parent in the discussion. You can't just make the decision and then assume that they're going to think it's okay. It's like with anything that you're trying to do.
Yeah, no, this is an excellent suggestion, because so often, you know, we put ourselves in the leadership role, and you know, you're absolutely right, and I feel that way about my own mother, too. She's very scared, and she's wondering what's going to happen to her. You know, she's just gotten diagnosed with a disease, so, you know, she's very frightened, and you have to remember almost to forget that you're, you know,
right.
their daughter or son, right. and kind of listen without,
yes.
you know, it's very hard, but you have to kind of force yourself to do that, because this is a very vulnerable time for them.
It really is. And it also is for you, you know, because
yeah.
it's hard to watch your parent who took care of you, for you to take care of them.
Right.
But, yeah, it's hard, and it's that's absolutely right.
Now, in your own case, so you cared for your own parents. Can you tell us a little bit about what that was like and what you wish
yeah.
you had done differently?
Yeah, I mean, when my parents got sick, and it was a long time ago, they died a while ago. My mother had me when she was after 40, so, you know, they were still in their 70s, but that was considered old because they were old when they had me, in a sense. But, you know, it was over 20 years ago, and even at the time I was working in aging, so I was working it and I was living it, and, you know, I was really astounded by, like, how helpless I felt, you know, because I said, I can do this, I'm in this field, right, I know how to do this, I know how to call, forget what I need, and it's like, as soon as I started, I would, like, hang up in tears, you know, because it was just so frustrating, and then my dad got sick during a holiday week, here we go, right, and
right.
You know, there wasn't enough help and all that stuff. But, you know, so, and I was living at a distance, and I had a sort of difficult situation because my dad died and then my mother died 6 months later. So it was, like, really, like, all in sort of one fall swoop.
My goodness.
Harder. Yeah.
Overwhelming.
Overwhelming. But I would say that, you know, two things. Number one, we probably waited too long to bring in hospice because that's a really scary thing to do.
Right.
And I'm not going to get into that now, but I know, you know, it's just hard to say you need it. But my biggest regret, frankly, was that I had never really had the conversation with my mother so I could learn who she really was, you know, because I was always just trying to get something done. I was officious. I was like, I wanted to make her better. I wanted the control, of which I had none. And so I never really took the time to just hang out with her and talk. And,
yeah.
You know, so I sort of wish I had, because she died, you know, and I'm piecing it together now, because you say, oh, I get it now, right?
Yeah.
But, like, I wish I'd sort of had the, you know, said, so what was it like? So not just talk about, you know, being sick, talk about her life, celebrate her life. And, you know, it's hard to do that. I mean, that's probably my one regret. But maybe, you know, so what I try to do is teach people what I think that would have been a really nice thing to do, you know, to sort of take a break and just hang out with them.
Right.
So. I would say.
Well, you know, in a way, you're able to help others do that and not make that same, you know, mistake. Or it's not that it was a mistake, but it wasn't something that I think you probably realized as
that's right.
As it was all happening. So
that's right. You do what you can do.
Exactly.
But,
and
you know,
go ahead.
No, you
go ahead.
Finish. Oh, I was just going to say that, you know, part of that for me was, you know, and some of that's running this private home care company that I run. And, you know, sometimes I say to families, just hire us for a little bit, because just give yourself a break to just sort of do nothing. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So you can just sit there. You don't have to be the one that does all of the work for your parent. Go just be. And, you know, and that's part of what I learned. I mean, some people need a lot more than that and some people need less, but, you know, that's what I really learned from it, and I try to tell people that, and they listen sometimes, and sometimes they don't.
Well, tell us about the Village Movement and the specifics, specific things
people.
that you do and to help families and particularly the seniors.
Sure. So
I guess would be different than some home care companies, because you're more than a home care company.
Right.
I would imagine.
Right. Well, so, you know, we've taken a just sort of strategic interest in helping the Villages launch all over the country, and that's just because we really believe in the movement as a company. And, you know, and I think, I don't know if we mentioned the V2V Network, but that's a sort of an industry organization that has grown up basically to help villages help each other. And
so the Village to Village Network is what you mean by the V2V Network.
Yes, the V2V Network is the Village to Village Network, and they have a website, and there's membership dues, and it's this wonderful way to sort of information share amongst villages, because you have to remember the big thing about this movement is that the people who run the villages are the people who are in charge, not the providers. So, you know, and that's a real big change, which is great. I love that, you know. But as a provider, like, I sometimes have to be careful to come in and not say, well, I think you should do this, because it's not my movement, it's theirs.
Right.
So the V2V Network is really this sort of association that sprung up that people should join, individuals or villages can join, and just sort of see what's going on with the villages, see where they're at all over the country, and, you know, get a sense of how to get started or where other people, villages have, like, faltered a bit, you know, how to get help. And it's great. So, you know, people should check that out.
And what is the website for that?
It's www.v, as in Victor, T as in Tom, V as in Victor, network.org, v2vnetwork.org.
Great. So this is for a village who may be beginning, sprouting, so to speak, and needs some help really figuring out, you know, how other villages who are in process are doing this.
Yep.
And so this is a great network for them to join.
It's a great
Wonderful.
Network. They have conferences, they have webinars, they have information, they have chats. You know, it's they had this other national conference in Oakland, California, and, you know, it's just extraordinary energy. I love it.
That's wonderful.
All those folks getting together. Yeah.
Now, speaking of a village movement that's ready to, or that's sprouting, that's ready to kind of take on a life of its own, what are some of the initial points that we need to focus on if we're going to start a village movement?
I mean, there's lots of different things. You know, everybody hits the same, you know, getting a board getting a board together that actually does work, you know, that there's just several people getting it done, not just one, right?
Right.
You need an active board to start with. Committees, you know, somebody has to be in charge of raising money. Somebody has to be in charge. It's like you have to write a business plan for it. It's because otherwise, you know, you go off in a lot of different directions. So treating it as a business, a not-for-profit business, that's, you know, and thinking seriously about that and having people who chair committees and get stuff done and people who are maybe politically connected, you know, getting that energy of folks together. Technology is a big piece of it now, especially there's villages that are sprouting up in more rural areas. You know, so technology is going to hold them together more than perhaps one in an urban area and get each other to talk to each other. So, you know, those are the kinds of things. And then just, you know, vetting the right service providers and saying don't start with something that's overzealous, right? You know, start with something that you can launch with and then add to it, because if you take it out, it makes it worse.
Right.
You know, you don't go back, you go forward. So I remember there was one local one here, and I'm in Boston, so they started out saying they were going to do snow shoveling, and I said to the board, I said, that's a really bad idea because you're not going to be able to find the vendors, you know. And they put it in the member. It was too late. They put it in the member, you know, the member directory saying this is your member benefits. So I think they did it for a little while. But it's hard to think about. Like, don't take on too much, basically.
Right. Oh, my. Yeah, snow shoveling is a...
Yeah, I mean, it was everybody. I wanted to hire, you know, I would have joined the village for a snow shoveler. You know, they came to my door at 8 a.m.
Right.
After
right.
a snowstorm. So, but it's just a lovely idea.
Yeah. Now tell me, how many villages, do you know how many villages there are, I guess, countrywide?
Yeah.
Or
my latest statistic, and this was a couple of months ago, there's, I think it was over 50 or 60 nationally, and hundreds that are in the planning stages and thousands that are in the concept stage, you know, where, you know, people are getting together informally at their dinner tables with their neighbors and saying, what are we going to do? Right?
Right.
You know, how are we going to do this differently? What are we going to do? Do you want to live with me? Are we going to, you know, buy a house together? Or how are we going to get this done? So, you know, I think the numbers of the communities, you know, there's some that are bigger, like Beacon Hill Village, and then there's other,
there's
a couple that just sprang up here in the Boston area we're really excited about. But it's really a way of being, so hopefully people will just come up with all different, a lot of volunteer villages now where volunteers are, you know, doing some of the work that the members might need, banking it. It's just, you know, it's iterating, which is cool.
So now, people, for those listening to the show, if you know someone who's interested in starting a village or you're starting to think about it yourself and want to start, I guess the place to go is V2V
Network.
Can you repeat that again? V2VNetwork.org. Right?
Yep. And also on our website, we have some information about villages and just and how our interaction has been with villages, if people are just interested in seeing history or a little bit about what we do. And
absolutely. So what is that? What's that
website? I never know if you're supposed to say www, but I say it just in case. www.house, H-O-U-S-E, and then middle-works, W-O-R-K-S.com.
So house-works.com.
Right.
Right.
And under innovation, you can find villages.
Terrific. Are you still there, Andrea?
Yeah,
I heard a beep there. This is great information, and I am very excited. I hope a lot of you out there who are even thinking about this, just go ahead and explore the site, house-works.com or v2vmetwork.org. And learn more about Andrea and the wonderful work that she's been doing with the Village Movement. And the Village to Village Network directory is available on the v2vnetwork.org site, correct? If they want to contact anyone
Absolutely.
In particular?
Yeah, there's a list. up and going villages, or I think you can even search by community and see which ones might be nearer to you, or you can call them even. Pick up the phone. What an awesome idea.
And, you know, I'm so excited about this because I've, you know, to be speaking to the person who actually started this movement 10 years ago, I mean, 10 years ago is quite a long time ago, and yet, you know, this concept is really, I mean, taking hold now. So
yeah,
I think I first read about it in Gail Sheehy's book. Passages of Caregiving, and it's really it's an honor to speak with you, and thank you so much for taking the time to share your experiences and you know, this new way of living for many seniors who are starting to prepare and think about it. So thank you again for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me. It was fun.
I'd like to thank our audience for tuning in, and I'd like you to join us on Tuesday, January 17th at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, when our Director of Events, Polly Whitehorn, will interview Wendy Howland, who is the owner of Howland Health Consulting, which offers case management and legal nurse consulting services nationwide, about the importance of life care planning. So you'll hear about care management through the experience of a nurse. To learn more about ecarediary.com, visit our website, and you can see some information about our upcoming shows under the tab blogs, and you'll see that we have not only a radio show, but we also have webinars and video shows. Everything on our website is free, registration is free, and we look forward to hearing your comments and feedback about our shows. You can also find us on social media on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter under eCare Diary. And if you'd like to find us on Twitter, our address is eCare_diary. Thank you again. Thank you, Andrea, and Happy New Year.
Oh, thank you. You too. Bye.
Bye-bye.